Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Reading from Canto 5, Chapter 5, Text Number 3. Ye va. Ye va mayeshe kritisauridharta. Ye va mayeshe kritisauridharta. Jani shudiham bharavartikeshu. Jani shudiham bharavartikeshu. Griheshu jayat majarati matsu. Griheshu jayat majarati matsu. Na priti yukta yavat artascha loke. Translation. Those who are interested in reviving Krishna consciousness and increasing their love of Godhead do not like to do anything that is not related to Krishna. They are not interested in mingling with people who are busy maintaining their bodies, eating, sleeping, mating, and defending. They are not attached to their homes, although they may be householders. Nor are they attached to wives, children, friends, or wealth. At the same time, they are not indifferent to the execution of their duties. Such people are interested in collecting only enough money to keep the body and soul together. Purport by Srila Prabhupada. Whether he is an impersonalist or a devotee, one who is actually interested in advancing spiritually should not mingle with those who are simply interested in maintaining the body by means of the so-called advancement of civilization. Those who are interested in spiritual life should not be attached to homely comforts in the company of family, children, friends, and so forth. Even if one is a grihastha and has to earn his livelihood, he should be satisfied by collecting only enough money to maintain body and soul together. One should not have more than that, nor less than that. As indicated herein, a householder should endeavor to earn money for the execution of bhakti yoga, shavanam kirtanam vishnu smaranam padasevanam archanam mandanam dasyam sakyatmanibhedanam. A householder should lead such a life that he gets full opportunity to hear and chant. He should worship the deity at home, observe festivals, invite friends in, and give them prasad. A householder should earn money for this purpose and not for sense gratification. Om Gyanamirandasya Gananjana. Everyone is quite tired this morning, having stayed up quite late last night. So, in this chapter, Lord Rishabhdev is giving very important instructions to his sons. Rishabhdev was the king of the entire world. And naturally, his sons, they were all a prince, or plural, princes. And it is the general tendency of one who is born in a wealthy family to indulge in all different forms of sense gratification because they have those facilities available to them. But Lord Rishabhdev, here he is instructing his sons to the contrary. Actually, before I move on, there is a story that Srila Prabhupada told on the, I believe it was the disappearance day of his Guru Maharaj. And the story is about, I believe it was Narad Muni, and how he gave four blessings to four different individuals. And I don't recall the Bengali, but he gave blessings to a butcher, to a Brahmin, to a Brahmacharya, and to a prince. To the prince, he said, "You should never die." To the Brahmacharya, he gave the blessing, "You should die immediately." To the butcher he gave the blessing, you should neither live nor die. And who's the fourth one? Who's the fourth one? I forget. The Brahmana. It does not matter if you live or die. Now, what is the reason behind these? The prince, Rosh Abdev is speaking to princes, a prince is born in a very opulent situation, and he is very much enjoying the results of past pious activities. But if he's not careful, he will ruin his life by engaging in sense gratification. He will completely ruin it, not only this life, but many, many future lives, because he will degrade himself and have to take birth in a lower species, animal, plant, reptile, aquatic, and work through the cycle of birth and death, gradually evolving through lakhs of species, simply to get back to the position that he's in now. To the butcher, he said, you should neither live nor die. Because living, he's creating a horrible condition by slaughtering animals and creating terror amongst the different species. And when he dies, he's going to reap the karma of this. So to the butcher, he said, you should neither live nor should you die. Because now you're engaging in hellish activities, but after your death, you'll have to suffer so much. To the brahmachari, he said, you should die immediately. Because in America, there's a saying, preaching to the choir. The choir, because they're practicing during the week, and they're there every Sunday, they hear every lecture. So they know everything that the preacher is going to say. So I'm preaching to the choir here. Your brahmacharis have a very austere life. I'm a grihastha. How can I know? So Narad Muni, I believe it was Narad Muni, he blessed the brahmacharis by saying, you should die immediately. Because your life is so austere, filled with so much tapasya. But when you die, you will reap rewards. And to the Brahman Vaishnav, he said, it doesn't matter if you live or die. Because as a Vaishnav, you are engaging in devotional service to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And after death, you will also be engaging in devotional service to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So it makes no difference. But Lord Rishabhdev, being a proper king, he wants to instruct his sons who are within the royal order properly. So he is cautioning them about the dangers and pitfalls of material life. So in this verse he is explaining that those who are interested in Krishna consciousness, those who are interested in spiritual life, Sri Prabhupada says, breaks it down into that category in the purport, whether one is an impersonalist or a devotee of the Supreme Personality of God. In either case, they're transcendentalists. In the first canto of Bhagavatam, Shukadeva Goswami described that there's three classes of transcendentalists. The impersonalist, Brahmatmi, Paramatmati, and the Bhagavan, the devotees of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So in the purport, Prabhupada said, whether you're an impersonalist or a Vaishnav, it doesn't matter to the extent that you have to be interested in cultivating only Krishna consciousness, only spiritual life. So Rishabhdev here, he is warning his sons about the dangers and pitfalls of material existence. He says, those who are interested in reviving Krishna consciousness and increasing their love of Godhead do not like to do anything that is not related to Krishna. They see that there is no pleasure to be derived in this material world. There's nothing to be derived in terms of pleasure. However, one who is advanced in Krishna consciousness knows that he can use anything within this world in the service of the Lord. But that is in the service of the Lord. For his own pleasure, this world is like a complete desert, devoid of any juice, devoid of any water, devoid of any form of sense gratification. He knows this factually. Rishabhdev goes on to explain, they are not interested in mingling with people who are busy maintaining their bodies by eating, sleeping, mating, and defending. nor are they attached to their homes, although they may be householders. So he's giving particular warnings to his sons because the royal order, they are generally householders. It is rare that a king is a brahmachari. It's very rare. Generally, he's the member of the householder class. And so when one is a householder and he has all kinds of wealth, he wants to make a beautiful house, he wants to have a beautiful wife, he wants to have nice education for his children, he wants to have nice facilities to attract people, to attract friends. But Rishabhdev is warning his sons, do not become like this. Do not become like this. Those who are serious in Krishna consciousness, they do not mingle with such people. Because by associating with such persons, that association will affect your consciousness, and you also will develop these subtle desires to enjoy the pleasures of children, to enjoy the pleasures of wife, to enjoy the pleasures of wealth, to enjoy the pleasures of home. It's very easy to become comfortable to your house, whether you have a palace, whether you have a very simple home, or whether you have simply a place to sleep on the floor in the ashram. Even if we only have a little, we can become attached to that little. And as brahmacharis, it is easy for you to become attached to the little and few possessions that you have, whether it be a very nice office, whether it be a very nice computer, whether it be a very long sika, any of these things we can easily become attached to. And one single attachment will lead to another, and that will lead to another, and that will lead to a third, to a fifth, to a thousand, to 100,000, to 1,000,000. I remember when I was first married, in New Vrindavan, the couples would live separate, even though they were married. And I remember thinking that in the evening, my wife, she can't even cook anything for me. I want to have facilities so she can at least make me a potato. Just one potato. And from that desire, I got a house, I got a car, I got another car, and so many things they come. The point is that from one attachment, many other attachments will come. You cannot be attached to only one thing, material thing. But a devotee, he is attached to only one thing. What is that only one thing? Service to Krishna. Service to Krishna, not a particular service to Krishna, but the concept of service to Krishna, the concept that I am servant. We cannot, in the beginning, we should become attached to a particular service. That is very good. We should become attached to our service as a pujari, our service as a cook, our service as a book distributor, to some particular service. But as we progress in devotional service, we have to understand that even these attachments, they must be given up. And we must understand that I am simply servant. Whatever the master wants me to do, whatever he wants me to do, that is my duty. I have to do that. I cannot say, no, 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 no. That is not my service. My service is something else. Now, this is all right in our beginning stages, but we should understand that this is very much neophyte. And one has to progress beyond that stage. Because at one point in time, for each and every one of us, Krishna will come in the form of death, and he will take away everything that we have. And we cannot be attached to anything. He will take away all of our abilities. He will take away all the strength of our senses, all the strength of our body. He will take away our mental strength, our intelligence. These things will all be gone from us. And He will forcefully rip them from us. I know for myself, a year and a half ago, I fell unconscious one day, came to in the hospital, and Krishna had just, I had no idea what had happened. I'd been unconscious for days. And Krishna had forcefully taken away practically everything that I had. My intelligence was gone. My memory was gone. If my memory was 100 prior, it was 8 when I regained consciousness. My abilities to do anything were completely ripped away. What was I left with? I couldn't even chant. My body had been so filled with drugs in the hospital. I couldn't chant. I couldn't think clearly. Krishna takes all these things away. And we have to remember that I'm simply a servant. In my case, I had this really, really, really struggle to chant my japa, to be able to engage in some service. I couldn't even read properly because I couldn't remember partway through one paragraph. After 2 sentences, I would forget what the first one was. And I suffered greatly because for so many years as a devotee, I identified with my service. Oh, I'm a pujari, I'm a construction worker, I'm a manager. Oh, all for Krishna. But here I was in a position, I woke up and I found myself in a position, I didn't even know where I was, didn't even know what happened to me. But I knew I cannot do anything what I used to do. And so mentally I really struggled to adjust. How do I identify myself? I know theoretically I'm servant of Krishna. But in a practical sense, what does that mean for me? Because I'd been attached to positions, I'd been attached to titles. I'd been attached to particular forms of service. So even as devotees, we have to move beyond those attachments. In the first canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, there's a very nice chapter where Arjuna, he's returning from Dwarka. It is after the departure of Lord Krishna. For the entire chapter, Arjuna is giving a very nice soliloquy. Yudhishthir had asked him some questions. Arjuna came back to the palace of Maharaj Yudhishthir, and Yudhishthir could see that Arjuna was so despondent. And he wanted to know. He asked Arjuna a series of questions. Why are you so despondent? Why do you look so miserable? And Arjuna went on to relate to his elder brother Yudhishthir about all the pastimes that Lord Krishna had engaged in along with the Pandavas. He began with how Arjuna was able to win the hand of Draupadi by shooting the fish looking at the pool of water that was trembling, and how he defeated Lord Shiva in the burning of the Kandava forest, and how he had saved Maya, the demon Maya, and by saving Maya, he had built the great Sudharma assembly house for Maharaj Yudhishthir. He went on to describe how Bhima had been empowered by Krishna to kill the great demoniac king Jarasandha. And it was only by killing Jarasandha that Yudhishthir was able to perform the Rajasuya sacrifice. And then he related how Krishna caused the hair of the Kuru wives to become loosened, signifying the death of their husbands, because Dushasan, I believe it was, had insulted Draupadi by dragging her by the hair. Yes? Anyhow, he went on to relate all of these different pastimes that he had personally engaged in with Krishna. Krishna right by his side, giving him direction, Krishna acting as his friend, Krishna acting as his guide. Sometimes Arjuna acting as superior, as friends sometimes do with friends. And Krishna gladly accepting that menial position to his loving friend Arjuna. And then Arjuna went on to relate how he was attacked by a group of cowherd men. He was bringing the wives of Lord Krishna from Dwarka to Hastinapur. And he had been attacked by a group of cowherd men who just had sticks. And Arjuna still had his Gandiva bow. And he wasn't lamenting. He was just expressing to Maharaj Yudhisthira with great emotion. He says, these are the same arms that defeated all the generals, the antagonistic generals during the Battle of Kurukshetra. This is the same Gandiva bow that defeated Lord Shiva, that defeated Lord Indra, defeated all the demigods. So I'm the same Arjuna. But all of my powers, all of my strength has been taken away by Lord Krishna. It's been taken away. The Lord gives and the Lord takes away. So even Arjuna, who is the dearmost friend and cousin of Lord Krishna, his abilities were stripped away. Even though he did not engage in a moment of sense gratification with all the skills, with all the abilities, with all the prowess that he had, he was the most intimate devotee, disciple, devotee of Krishna. And he did not use any of these for a drop of sense gratification, and still Krishna took them away. He withdrew them. So what will happen to us? Every attachment that we have to give up. We have to learn to sever it. Queen Kunti gave a beautiful prayer. She was the mother of the Pandavas. And in the pages of Srimad Bhagavatam, Prabhupada describes her as the incarnation of the success potency of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. An incarnation of one of the Lord's potencies. And Queen Kunti prayed, let my attachment to my kinsman be severed. Let it be cut off. I do not want to maintain this attachment. Why? Because this attachment, even though it's to your great devotees, will cause me to take birth again. It will cause me to suffer. So here in these pages of Bhagavatam in this chapter, Lord Rishabhdev, he is cautioning his sons on how, in these verses, how not to live, what not to do. Sometimes we have to know the nots, the do nots. Don't do this, don't do that, don't do this other thing. Because by learning from hearing, that's actually the best, the way of learning. If we can't learn by hearing, sometimes we have to learn by doing. That is the second highest. And then the lowest is you hear, you do, and you still don't learn. So here in this particular verse, Lord Rishabhdev, he is cautioning his sons not to associate with worldly-minded people who are simply attached to maintaining the wife, children, home, and wealth. Do not be attached to them. He says, those who are interested in reviving Krishna consciousness, they are not interested in this. But at the same time, he says, they are not indifferent to the execution of their duties. So we have particular duties that we have to do. We cannot be attached to not doing our duties. Krishna also says this in Bhagavad Gita to Arjuna. He says, never be attached to not doing your duty. So we have to draw, it's an extremely fine line, extremely fine, knowing what is enough, what is too little, what is too much. For householders, we have to maintain some form of income. We have accepted the responsibility of maintaining a wife, maintaining children, raising them, getting them properly educated. We have to have income. But what is, Prabhupada says here, a householder should earn money for this purpose, meaning, let me go back one sentence. A householder should lead such a life that he gets full opportunity to hear and chant. He should worship the deity at home, observe festivals, invite friends in, and give them prasad. A householder should earn money for this purpose and not for sense gratification. So we have to understand the very fine line, whether we're a householder or we're a brahmachari. Is two dhotis enough? Or do I need three? Or one? Can I get by with one? No one can decide this for us. How much money do I have to have? We need to guide our lives not by how much money do I want. We may want to send our children to very nice schools. But Prabhupada says, do not over-endeavor to earn money. What we are due by our karma will come to us naturally, automatically. And it comes in mystical ways. It comes in magical ways sometimes. I know for myself, I had one instance where in New Vrindavan, there was a period of time for many years when you didn't require to have money. And I did not have 2 rupees to my name for years. Not 1 rupee. Not 50 paisa. We lived in complete poverty. Anyhow, times changed and we required to have some money. So I started some business. And anyhow, to make a long story short, within a matter of 30 minutes or so, I had made $11,000. It just came. I thought of this particular man who I had done business before. I thought of him 3 days in a row, and I thought, well, let me call him. You know, there's some reason that I'm thinking of this man. I wasn't thinking of him. He just came into my mind 3 days in a row. So I picked up the phone, and he said, oh, I've been meaning to call you for 3 days. That's what he told me. And so within a matter of a few minutes, we concluded a business transaction, and I already had a buyer for the thing he was selling, and like that. And it's like, well, thank you, Krishna. It came from Krishna, and I realized it. So things like this happen if we have faith in the Lord, if we understand that everything is coming from Him, and everything is going by His grace also. But my point is that it's a very fine line knowing what is enough and what is too much. But Prabhupada taught us that we have to utilize our time for engaging in Krishna consciousness, even if we're a householder. Householders, we don't have much time. We have business, we have families. We don't have much time. Brahmacharya, you live in the temple, your life is very simple. All of your time, in fact, you have no time. All of your time goes into serving for the temple. But for a householder, our time has to be divided in so many ways. We have our occupation, so we can earn our livelihood, so we can maintain our family, so we can have some money to engage in devotional service. But time is very much divided for all of us. But Prabhupada cautioned that, especially for a householder, they live very simply. Only earn as much as you need. Not want, but need. And utilize the rest of your time, or as he says here in the purport, worship the deity at home, observe festivals in the temple, go on parikrams, invite friends into your home, give them prasad, preach to them. In other words, utilize your time for engaging in Krishna consciousness, for spreading Krishna consciousness, not for engaging in sense gratification. If we spend our human form of life engaging in sense gratification, we will be forced to take birth like the hogs and the dogs and the trees. So this chapter is full of wonderful teachings. Rishabhdev Maharaj, he is as we say in the West, he's holding no punches. He's just boom, boom. He's giving it to us. Straight on. Don't live your life like the hogs and the dogs. Engage only in sense gratification. Associate with those people who are serious about becoming Krishna conscious. And avoid the association of those people who are materialistically inclined, who are only interested in maintaining their wife, their children, their homes, their bank balance. Do not associate with them. Why? Because you become like whom you associate with. That's why in the scriptures, I believe it's Srila Rupa Goswami, he so strongly emphasized the necessity of proper association. Because we become like those we associate with. Hare Krishna. Any questions or comments? Yes, Prabhu? Microphone?
Hare Krishna. Thank you for a wonderful class. I just wanted to ask that our mind has a particular tendency to find fault with others constantly. How do you overcome that?
When we're finding fault with others, it's a form of envy. And jealousy, when we're jealous, it's like, you have a brand new car, I want a brand new car also. That's jealousy. Envy is when you have a new job at work, I want your job. So when we're fault-finding, it's a form of enviousness. We're seeing that some person has something that we do not have, and so we are envious of that person. And that's also, we're also being very, very critical of Krishna, who is the Supreme Controller. He has given this other person something that he has not given me. So indirectly we're saying, Krishna, don't you know I'm superior to this person? What's wrong with you? Don't you see my good qualities? We're subtly thinking like that. We're actually finding fault with Krishna and his judgment. Seeing how he has blessed someone in a superior fashion, and in what we feel is a superior fashion, than how he has blessed us. So there's two approaches we have to take. One, we have to realize that actually I'm being critical of Krishna. I'm not seeing that he is awarding this person something for some particular reason, and he is not giving it to me for a very different reason. Perhaps I will become proud if I have this particular thing. Whatever. It doesn't matter. We have to, each and every one of us, we have to analyze what this reason is for ourselves. And at the same time, on the other hand, so that we can reduce our envy and animosity towards this other individual or Prabhu, we have to realize that I am Das, he is Prabhu. I am servant, he is master. And how do we best gain that realization? By humbly serving them. Now that can be the most bitter medicine. Isn't it? It can be the most unpalatable and bitter medicine to take, especially when it's really strong. When the fault-finding and when the envy is really strong, then to take that humble position as servant can be very difficult. But when the disease is strong, the medicine also has to be strong. It also has to be potent. But those two paths are there. to understand that Krishna, he's the supreme controller. He's giving and he's taking according to his pleasure. And he's no fool. And at the same time, that I should serve this other person, if it's a devotee, and understand that I'm envious of something that he has that I don't have, and I think that I should have that. So therefore, because I see that he has it and I don't, I'm finding some fault in him. Actually, I'm finding fault with Krishna, but I'm directing it towards him. Does that answer your question? Anyone else? We have to remember that Krishna, he's the supreme controller. As he says in Bhagavad Gita, not a blade of grass moves without my sanction. You know, we hear it, but we have to somehow or another be able to understand it in our heart, in our intelligence, in our mind, and see the hand of Krishna in every activity all day long. That's why the pages of Srimad Bhagavatam start out with a description of the universal form of the Lord, describing how the trees on the planet are the hairs in the body of the universal form, the rivers are the veins, the sun and the moon are representations of some aspects, I forget which, of the universal form of the Lord. So we can see externally, oh, here's trees. Oh, those trees, they're the hairs in the body of the universal form of the Lord. So we can begin to use our external consciousness to affect our external perception to affect our consciousness, to begin to adjust it. So we have to also learn to see how everything is being done only under the sanction of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Nothing can happen without his will. And we have to learn to fully surrender to the will of Krishna. And for a conditioned soul, that is very difficult. But that is also the process of Krishna consciousness. So Prabhupada has said, if you simply engage in worshiping the deity as I have taught you, you study my books, you follow the process of Krishna consciousness as I have given, your success in this lifetime is guaranteed. It's a simple process, but we have to follow it very properly, very carefully. And so therefore, this proper association is very important. Okay, I've spoken enough. Any other questions? Comments, corrections? Gantara Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai, Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai.